the compelling story of Britain's biggest gun-running investigation, known as Operation Abona, I hope I pronounced that correctly, is based on real events that have remained mostly unreported. Michael Hallows is a 30-year veteran of policing London and was appointed... Emergency Services Coordinator for the State of Victoria. He's written all about it in the book Operation Abona. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Delighted to be joining me live from somewhere. I can't tell exactly where he is, but no doubt he'll fill me in on all of the above. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Giles, and thank you so much for having me on your program.
The pleasure's all mine. So first of all, whereabouts are you? Because I can't tell from the background. It could be anywhere between Australia and Albuquerque. So where exactly are you this morning, sir?
Well, you're kind to ask. Yes, it is a bit anonymous. For those listeners, I've got a wooden panel behind me, but I'm somewhere buried in the heart of London.
Marvellous. Can I just get the pronunciation of the operation right? Because it's a Monday, and I can never get these things right on a Monday. Is it Abona? Abona? How are we pronouncing it?
It's a Portuguese verb, Abona. So Abona, we chose our operational names due to themes, and they changed every month. And that particular month in 97 was Portuguese verbs, and it's abona. It means quite fitfully to pay.
Criminals
should pay.
Well, indeed. So tell me a little bit then about the background behind this, because this was a huge gun running operation. Are we talking, because you know, obviously for most of us, thankfully, the only crime that we see is via Hollywood. We don't see gun running on our streets every day, one would hope. So explain a little bit about the background behind. Is it sort of shady men in balaclavas with ship containers at ungodly hours of the morning?
Oh, I wish it was. It would be a far better story. But this is very British. This was the late 90s, 96, when someone was making machine guns and was supplying them to gangs in Manchester, Liverpool, even Dublin and London. And they were being used in some terrible shootings. And what was fascinating for us was that they turned up in the boot of a car, first of all in Whitechapel, then in Plaistow, and then in Gravesend, and we discovered that we'd found a scam going on that had been started in 96 when two Liverpool criminals sentenced to 18 years were released, pardoned by the then Home Secretary, Michael Howard, not even 11 months into their 18-year sentences. This is an extraordinary time. And we find that customs are at the heart of this, together with the prison service, probably more unwittingly, and then the Home Secretary, who should really have shown some more diligence in what on earth was going on, because we get into late 96 and we're seeing a repeat of more criminals wanting to get early parole to break out of prison too.
This time, the late 90s, is this the first time that we're seeing automatic weapons on the streets because of London, other capitals or other major cities? Because we're all, you know, going back to those of us who grew up with the Sweeney in the 70s, we're all used to sort of bank robbers and the shotgun sort of situation. But obviously crime changed somewhat, to put it mildly, in the 80s and 90s with, you do cocaine, heroin, whatever, coming onto the streets of the major cities. And with that said, the sheer nastiness, can we say, of the people operating these gangs?
Yeah, we were seeing an escalation. I hadn't seen it since the biker gang warfare in the 80s and 70s, when certainly old World War II machine guns surfaced, but not in huge numbers. What we were seeing in 96, 97 was a sudden escalation where gangland bosses wanted more powerful weaponry. And this particular MAC-10 submachine gun, which appears on the cover of the book, could loose off, you know, 30 rounds from a clip, so a magazine, in just 2 seconds. It's awesome, terrifying. And of course, the guy who's supplying them supplied the ammunition and a silencer. So ideal for the drive-by shooting where you want to take your enemy by surprise. And as the book explains, you know, one of Glasgow's big villains, Paul Ferris, came to London to buy three of these.
Is it? I mean, when you say drive-by, we automatically kind of think of U.S. gun culture, don't we? Where automatic weapons are easily available. Is it a case of then of do you think these are the gangs aping the Bloods and the Crips of Los Angeles, for example?
Yeah, I fear so. I mean, so some of the behaviors that we saw, and the book opens with three horrendous episodes. One in Moss Side, where two constables on patrol who are called by neighbors anxious about a small gathering of young men come under fire, a complete clip of some 20 to 30 rounds of 9mm ammunition is fired at them. Then a few weeks later, PCs and constables in Moss Side again on a foot chase come face to face with another MAC-10. And then poor Devon Dawson in Brixton, a car sidles up to him whilst he's standing outside a pub in Cold Harbour Lane and is mown down with another MAC-10.
So what is the reaction then of the police today? And this isn't something that you leave to, if you like, the ordinary police service. Is this presumably we're talking about a specialist branch that obviously you were involved with, and were you heading this up?
I was the lucky man whose desk the file landed on. So I was in what the journalists love to call the shadowy intelligence branch at Scotland Yard, called SO11, or the Directorate of Intelligence. And my job with my team, my wonderful team, was to collate all of the information about firearms and ammunition that was appearing and shootings. And my dearly departed late DC John Bryan saw the pattern and brought it to me, his boss, saying, we need to look at this. And my goodness, we traveled on this. It was the most amazing investigation.
So when you say you traveled, I mean, obviously this is quite a, must be quite a daunting task, because you're seeing a level of violence and a level of technology or hardware that you haven't really come across. As you said before, the previous machines and this were kind of sort of left over and dug up from the Second World War. So you must have quite an amount of trepidation, because these are not only deadly weapons that you're dealing, but you're also dealing with people who traffic in them and people who presumably aren't afraid to use them.
Oh, indeed. And for me, although I was 37 years age, I think then with 16 years service, this was my first real Scotland Yard investigation. I had only just been appointed from uniform to become a detective. And it was in trepidation, running a major investigation, thankfully assisted by the security service MI5. And we find ourselves in a melting pot where we've got Strathclyde Police, MI5, Merseyside, Manchesterside Police, and ourselves all coming at this from different angles. And obviously quite a shock for us to find that Customs have in some way formed a relationship with long-term prisoners in Full Sutton and are doing a deal with them. And these guns are turning up based on anonymous, we were told, information from these inmates, and Customs not telling us how they came by the information, who their sources were. And whilst that was running with a view to getting early parole, we've got the same guns made by the same armourer turning up being used in crime. So we've got two parallel tracks. We've got prison inmates wanting to get early parole, doing a deal with Customs and with the prison service and ultimately the Home Secretary to get out. At the same time, we've got an armourer who's not only supplying that chain, we've got people in Manchester being shot at, we've got a man dying in Brixton. So yes, it was a very intense time. I'm glad to say we got on top of it as the book will start very quickly.
When you say an armourer, I mean, are we talking sort of some guy in a workshop here then literally making these, or is he getting a hold of from various sources? Because obviously you think, okay, they're coming in from China, or he's getting them in from Israel, or somehow they're appearing, because you've spoken at the UN about the illicit arms trade. So I mean, if you say an armourer, and we think about a guy in a warehouse or in a lockup making or assembling these things, does it not that almost suggests a sort of twisted cottage industry of gun making, gun supply, or is it just a huge illicit trade that's going on and we know very little about until we hear about the drive-bys?
Well, it's interesting how you describe it, Charles, because it was a cottage industry. Without wishing to spoil the plot of the book, and if you flick to the back pages, you'll find the photographs which will give it all away. But yes, there was a workshop. It was down south of England, and there was a man sitting there making Mac 10 machine guns. He was very good at it, and he had improved the design of the basic Ingram submachine gun, which was designed in America for special forces going to Vietnam. And this man in the south of England, I hate to spoil the book, he made these. He took the basic and he reinvented it. And that was his downfall, because the parts he manufactured were totally unique. Mm. So every gun we found of that unique manufacture had to be linked back to him. And we were finding dozens of these. So it was really, really important. We got to him quickly to stop that cottage industry where he was making them and supplying the ammunition. I mean, thousands of rounds of ammunition.
It's very interesting indeed. Also, what's sparked my interest is this: the fact that they were in Dublin as well. Because if you think about the history of both the Republic and Northern Ireland, they have experience in moving arms and armaments around the country. Did that come into play at all? Because obviously, at that time, although after the Good Friday Agreement, the IRA has decommissioned its arms, quote unquote, there are still organisations that aren't going to go away and have experience. In running all sorts of contraband, I think we'll use the chapel term for it.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. There's no evidence in our investigation this was a paramilitary capability. But of course, the paramilitaries crossed through the world of supplying contraband. And the particular weapon recovered in Dublin was very similar to the events in Glasgow and in Manchester, Liverpool. It was a gangland feud. Mm. It was a gangland shooting. There's no evidence of it being paramilitary, but it's a fearsome weapon.
How do you monitor them? Because you don't send somebody out on the street just to walk around with a hoodie and say, got any guns, do you? I mean, that's one sure way of having a very quick and unsuccessful organization. Did you wiretap? Did you listen in? Did you use all the sort of technology available to your disposal?
You're quite determined, Giles, for me to give the story of the book away.
Okay, well, I just thought, just as a final two questions, but did you use the latest? If you had drones at your disposal, would there have been drones hovering around the Greater Manchester area, for example?
The book does describe, Giles, the techniques that we pioneered, and I described some of the techniques. It was like flying the aeroplane whilst writing the manual,
right?
Learning to fly, hoping someone had built a landing strip. It was fascinating. And as a newly appointed detective, it really was a lot of interest.
So when it comes to writing this book then, after, and I won't ask you any more questions about how it all pans out, because I can go and buy the thing. But you were now looking at, and although for those of us of a certain age, 97, it only seems like yesterday, it is coming up to almost 30 years or so. So the way that the criminality has progressed and the way that, tragic incidents notwithstanding, we haven't gone down that full-on situation that we're seeing in the inner cities of the States or heaven forbid, the major conurbations of Central and South America, for example.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But it was investigations like Abenar that put a stop to it. The mass supply of machine guns, ammunition, was very much nipped in the bud, thank God. And it sent certain messages to the criminal fraternity. And we just don't see that level of violence being meted out. Occasionally, one of these MAC-10s will surface again, but they don't happen that often. And I hope and pray that we got the majority of them off the street. And yes, we don't see the same level of criminality with drive-by shootings. Not often do we see gun violence as being the method of choice of settling feuds. It seems to be, on a different scale now, and may God it stay that way.
What do you hope the people take from the book? Because is it presumably this is what happened? Because this was presumably quite quietly celebrated when at the time, and obviously it succeeded because we're talking about it. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't have written the book. But what do you hope the people will take from Operation Abenar?
I hope the reader is fascinated by what happened. It's a true story. It's based on real events. There's a little bit of artistic license riddled through it. But anyway, I hope that people will enjoy it. A bit of nostalgic, true crime, deep investigation, good process, bad guys getting caught and put out of business. But I think at the end, they might feel a little bit of anger. Because it's not justice as we might think it could happen.
Well, I wait for the Netflix series as well. It sounds absolutely perfect for that one, Michael, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it would make a good TV or film drama. But I would say that because I'm the author.
Exactly.
It's my vanity project and I'm happy.
Well, listen, I'm very glad that you bought the book out. The book is called Operation Abona, and thank you for explaining why it was called that. Inside story of Britain's biggest gun running scandal. Government officials didn't want to talk. What are you up to at the moment, by the way, Michael? How can people follow you online or on the socials?
I have a very low profile for many obvious reasons, but I find some solace in being a school governor at a local primary school, and that keeps me very busy.
Well, after having dealt with gun-running criminals, I should imagine a bunch of five-year-olds at lunchtime is probably even more of a challenge.
Yeah, but it's lovely seeing their happy faces, so that's good.
The book is called Operation Abona, Inside Story of Britain's British Gun Running and Scandal. Government officials didn't want you to weren't told. It's out now. It will also be available as a virtual download from our own virtual bookstore. So go forth and download it. Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Giles, thank you. And thank you to your listeners.